Attention Bajoran listeners, this is Gulch Sten, administrator of Podspace 9, or in this case, Pod M-Pod Nor. I demand that you cease listening to other podcasts and pay attention to this one, the weirdest place for trash in the Cardassian Union. If you do not comply, my associates, Glyn Anna and Conscript Jude, will be forced to take extreme measures to force you to listen to our bullshit. Jude, Anna, how are you on this fine evening?
Well, I have been enjoying a fine glass of Canard and contemplating my selfless duty to the state, but this one colleague on a temporary work project keeps picking fights over trivial shit, and I'm hoping he's not trying to flirt with me. Jude, that's you will recognize this reference later.
Okay.
It's a surprise joke that will come in handy later.
I just had to watch these two episodes, and I have some mixed emotions about that.
It's a little bit of a seesaw, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah. I also was forced to write the summary for Meridian, which means I had to pay attention to it.
You also had to explain Avatar the Last Airbender to your offspring.
Yeah, and then I had to summon up the mental capacity to try and explain reincarnation to my son, because he's just started watching Avatar the Last Airbender, the cartoon, and he had all kinds of questions. And yeah.
I imagine that Nug was better than anybody who like is on Twitter and need like the ending explained articles that like every website that every pop culture website does.
He's just excited about it and was just like interested. And I said, well, we'll watch. We'll find out. But also, like, let's try and not get into a nuanced conversation about how reincarnation works right now. It's your bedtime and I have stuff to do. So let's move this along.
I once had like, I can't remember what movie I was watching, but I was watching a movie alone and I had like a deep there was like an afterlife segment or something in there. And I had like a deep existential crisis in the middle of a movie theater. But I can't, and I'm like,
I think it's funny that you can't remember what movie it was now.
I can't. Which is
you had this deep existential crisis, but apparently it didn't stick.
Like I remember like completely like disassociating in a movie theater. I can't remember what the movie was.
That's very funny.
Oof.
Unfortunately, we have two episodes to talk about tonight, when in reality, I think we're going to spend like 40 minutes on one and 5 on another.
Yeah. No, that's the problem. There is some stuff happening in both of these episodes.
Yeah.
Like, Meridian's not good, but it brings both gifts and curses.
That's a great way of putting it. It really does. Yeah, let's just get into this bullshit.
Yeah. All right. So this is tonight we're talking about two episodes, Civil Defense and Meridian. So we're starting with season 3, episode 7, Civil Defense, written by Mike Crode and directed by Reza Badi. Our episode starts with Ben, Miles, and Jake in an ore processing facility to try to refit the facility into a deuterium refinery. While trying to delete Cardassian files from the computer, Miles accidentally finds a file and it asks for a code. When it rejects his security clearance, alarm sounds and seals them in. This is why you just reimage machines. In ops, the crew receives an alarm about a worker revolt. In the ore processing room, a pre-recorded message from Gul Dukat advises the revolutionary Bajoran workers to stop their attempts to take control of the station. It gives them 8 minutes. Unfortunately, the Cardassians didn't leave the crew their codes, and while Odo still has codes, he's working to try to resolve it. Quark barges into Odo's office to demand what's going on, and upon learning decides he'll stay in the security office, as it is the safest place to be. The gang of the ore processing facility finds that every exit is magnetically sealed. To buy time, Sisko, air quotes, surrenders to the computer program. Jake finds a hatch in the ore processing tube and has to crawl up to an exit to open it from the outside. All the while, Gul Dukat is fucking droning on in the background.
It's
just like, it's the funniest thing.
It's Well, it is, but it's also not the funniest thing in this episode. That's what I love about it. You think sets you up thinking like, oh, I'm so tired of hearing Dukat's voice in this episode. Oh, are you?
Oh, are you? Yeah.
That's what you think.
Just as toxic gas is being pumped in the room and Cisco's ready to put a phaser in his mouth from having to listen to Dukat's bullshit, Jake opens up the hatch and they're able to escape into an access tube. However, as the rebelling workers have escaped, the station's counterinsurgency protocols have been activated and every door is locked. Every part of the station is isolated from each other, so Kira does what comes naturally. She shoots the door. But force fields have now also been erected. That means Quark is stuck in the security office with Odo as well. The Siskos and Miles are trying to open up a door with little success. They decide to create an explosive using ore and modified tools. In Ops, Jadzia gets shocked by a security program, by a security field, which activates the next security program, preparing toxic, preparing like mustard gas to be pumped into the habitat ring. It's like neurazine gas or whatever, but
it's like
a chemical weapon.
It's the traditional Star Trek kill everyone gas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it has neuro in it, therefore.
Yeah, Garrick, however, struts into Ops using his access codes, which apparently only let him walk around the station. Garrick reveals that the only way to stop the gas is to destroy life support, which buys them 12 hours. This, however, escalates the counterinsurgency program, which sets a self-destruct sequence for 2 hours.
It's still better than 8 minutes, okay?
So many questions about who wrote this program.
I think we know the answer.
Yes.
I'm like crying a little. I'm laughing so much at the summary. In security, as Quark becomes resigned to his fate, Odo comforts him by telling Quark that he is the most devious Ferengi he ever met. Yes, even more than Cousin Gala, who has the moon.
Well, when your boyfriend is feeling down, you have to cheer him up.
Garrick investigates everything at Ops, and he finds that Dukat is the only one who can deactivate it. They devise a plan to fool the sensors into thinking Garrick is Dukat, but that fails, and a new security measure is added, a phaser turret that just fucking obliterates one of the red shirts.
I laughed so hard at that.
Literally disintegrates.
Yeah.
My man is
full on vaped as he runs, as he like dashes willy-go-nilly across Ops.
Just this little replicator, just like pew pew pew, like this little turret or whatever, just pew pew. It's just the funniest thing. Dukat then beams onto the station and he starts to monologue, because that's what that bitch's opening move is, saying that he received a distress call from a recording of him, and oh, isn't that so funny. He refuses to deactivate the program until they've had a few things to discuss. Dukat muses that Garrick in a corner cowering is a lovely sight, while Garrick shoots back by making Dix Dukat's father, implying that he was tried for treason. Dukat deactivates the security turret while taking Kira into the CEO's office to discuss his terms. He says that his terms are a permanent Cardassian garrison on the station. Kira says, fuck you. But as Dukat tries to beam off the station, he cannot. Another Cardassian appears saying, bitch, Dukat, you thought you were going to leave while your station was destroyed? Die. Like, just go die in a fire.
You cowardly traitor.
It's the awkward little, like, shuffling foot-to-foot dance he does in this scene is such incredible physical acting, where he's just like, oh my God, it's so good. I can't.
He's so smug. He's like, yeah, I'll leave you guys, and like, yeah, I'll just come back like 5 minutes before the destruct is gonna go off. It'll be fine. Like, you'll definitely be willing to talk terms. And it's just like, Dukat, you thought that you could get away with being a coward. Well, guess what, bitch?
His access codes have been revoked, and the self-destruct now cannot be stopped. they decide that since they can't turn off the self-destruct, they can instead shut off the fusion reactor. Meanwhile, the boys down in the corridor are able to blow up the door and make their escape. In Ops, Dukat starts talking about how brilliant the Cardassian mind is, and Garak fucking loses it and tells Dukat to shut up. Kira's not gonna fuck him.
This... We're gonna talk about this scene, but I just need to say, I was flabbergasted by this scene in a way that I have not been by television in a very long time. I had to go back and watch it three times because Dukat's reaction to being called out by Garak, the way he goes, Garak, like, chef kiss.
I somehow always forget that that's in this episode. And every time I watch this, I remember all of the Bajoran workers plot. And then I always forget about the, dude, she's not going to fuck you speech.
And it's not, listeners, I know we are hyperbolically horny about Star Trek on this podcast sometimes. This is not hype. This is not exaggeration whatsoever.
Garak, not in the least.
Other than using the word fuck, everything we have said about this is true. Garak literally tells Dukat, she's not gonna bone down with you. And the look, first on Dukat's face at having been called out, because you have to imagine it's been a hot minute since anybody called him out like this before in front of his face. But then Kira standing there very awkwardly while Dukat and Garak like, yell at each other about whether or not Dukat has a chance to lay pipe with her. Is
what just, a scene.
I tip my hat to you.
Andrew Robinson Riza and Mark Alamo.
You got an incredible performance out of your actors this episode in this scene. And
yeah. That everybody well in this, like everybody in this episode is just, I mean, we'll talk about this after the summer, but everybody's just top notch.
Yeah.
The amount of like I don't mean like romantic chemistry, but just like the chemistry between Robertson and Alamo of just like being the most bitchy to each other is truly astounding.
It's fantastic.
They're so good.
I've been loving this show for a bit here, but I think these two episodes, for very different reasons, really marked a point where I was just like, what the fuck is this show? And I really love this show, but what the fuck is this show? And that's what kind of sealed it. You know, you reach a point with a show where you're just like, this has become a favorite. And you sort of reflect on what, you kind of look back on what that inflection point was. I kind of hate that it's these two episodes, but it kind of is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Both of these are just insufferably horny. I love it.
Anyway, continue with your summary.
Where am I? They figure out that they can overload the power grid using the force fields to give people access to the station, which they're able to do. A lot of sparks fly out. I'm surprised the camera didn't shake more. Frankly, this is the most Star Trek thing that I've ever, like, we're going to defeat the security grids by overloading them, and sparks are going to fly from every possible surface because nobody in the 21st century has invented a circuit breaker.
Yeah.
You can't ground things in space, Justin. There's no ground.
There's no ground. They're able to then contact Sisko and tell him how to disable the fusion reactor. Ben tells Jake to go to running mount, but Jake insists that he's coming with them. After crawling through a gas and fire ridden tube and Jake saving O'Brien, Ben is then able to save the station by redirecting the energy of the self-destruct into the shields. The station is saved, and as the doors open, Quark breaks into his own file, revealing Odo's opinion of him as a small-time, self-important con artist. Odo reminds Quark that he did warn him to stay away from the computer.
What a fucking episode.
This is my treat episode.
Yeah.
It's a weird episode to be like, this is a thing I go back to as a comfort watch.
Yeah. Yeah, I go back to this one over again. I love it.
I'm not joking when I said I watched that scene. I watched Garrick call out Dukat three times in a row. And I probably will do that every single time I watch this episode.
It's incredible.
There's so much going on in this episode, but like, I just love Garrick. Every time he shows up, I'm happy. And Dukat is like a problematic fave in the sense that like you hate him, but also every time he shows up, something great's happening.
He's incredible. Anytime he's on screen, he's just incredible. And like, I love Mark Alema, like slays in that role. Like, I mean, it's like Alema and Louise Fletcher, like you hate both Dukat and Wynn, but they just are both incredible characters and like, I love it every time they're on screen.
That they lull you into the sense of like with the recordings, you think that it's just going to be like Dukat droning on in the background for the whole episode. And then he just appears in Ops like, ta-da!
It's like, hello, hello, hello. I understand that you're being terrorized by past me, which is not as fun as present me.
Yeah, I was not at all expecting him to show up in the lizardy flesh in the middle of this episode, and I was thrilled with it because, man, every part of every scene he was in this episode was terrific. The scene where he and Kira are in Cisco's office and he's like, you're not gonna condemn 2,000 people to die because you don't like me, and she just flat out stares at him and he's like, oh well, fuck. Like,
yeah,
I don't understand. I'm using all my riz and she still hates me. Like,
I threatened all these people. How else is a man supposed to flirt?
Right? Oh my God.
You didn't, Justin, you didn't even call out one of my favorite moments from this episode. I mean, you kind of did, but the like all of the scenes with Quark and Odo where and my favorite one is like when Quark is like having his like anxiety, like info dump meltdown thing.
He's having,
right?
Where he's just like having talking, an existential talking. Crisis, just like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
On.
And the like, you know, the moment where he's like, have I ever told you about my cousin, Gala, the one who owns the moon? And Odo's just like, yes, you've told me about cousin Gala with the moon so many times. And I feel like that scene resonates with me as somebody who has been on both sides of that interaction many times.
Yeah, there is so much good like material for ships in this episode. Odo and Quark are full on like coupley in this I don't even know the word for it, but like the way he's like comforting Quark by telling him he's devious.
And do we think is the lie? Do we think that him telling Quark that he was the most devious is the lie? Or do you think that the small time con artist thing that he has in the file is the lie that's there for Quark to find and be mad
about? I think he thinks that Quark is a small time con artist, and I think that's why he thinks he's charming. I think he finds Quark's the scale of Quark's ego out being so out of proportion with his ability is, I think, part of what entertains Quark to Odo.
what a good episode. Yeah. And Jude, welcome to the first DS9 meme you unlocked today.
Right.
Because you unlocked several.
God, boy, did I. Attention Bajoran workers is a thing I have heard before, and now I know where it's from. And it's not what I was expecting, but it's very funny. God, what an episode.
It's so, yeah. Frankly, this is, I think, apparently the, like, according to like some of the writers of the show, this episode was just the worst to write, which they were just like, apparently had to go through like three or four drafts.
Oh, wow.
And they were just like, It's not working. And then finally I just like,
oh, but it's perfect.
It actually worked.
It came out perfect. Like 10 on 10. And it's got, there's some like really good, like, you know, I mean, we've talked a lot about the funny, horny character moments, but there's some other really good character moments too. Like we've got Jake who like, you know, defies Sisko to save Miles' life.
Yeah, what a great moment.
Yeah. And we have like that moment where Sisko and O'Brien like look at each other and they're like, okay, we got to do this. If one of us falls back, the other one can't follow. You know, you can't, you know, the other one has to go on. We're going to do this. And we're just going to like trust that Bashir can fix us.
Yeah.
Which is not a trope that we see in Star Trek that often. No going back for anybody. And like, we, you know, the assumption that like you are going in there, you're going to get horribly burned. And like, hopefully the doctor can fix you at the end. It's like almost like Holden in The Expanse or something like that.
Yeah.
It's not something we see in Trek a lot. And it's really a nice little bit. And like, and Sisko doesn't go back for Miles. Like is he going to go back and get him? And nope.
Yeah,
and
which I think
she had to. Yeah,
I think it's I think what is that? It's a like it's a change in the storytelling. And I think one of the things that it does really well, it helps boost the stakes of the episode by the fact of if Sisko went back and got O'Brien, you would know that everything is fine because,
yeah,
oh, well, he went back in and he's going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause Star Trek would never say no going back, or it doesn't say going back to save somebody is a bad idea. And yeah, I just, and so like the fact that Sisko like leaves him to save the day, I think is sort of just sort of like, I think it's a brave choice for the writing.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. And yeah. All of that sequence I think is some really, really like the sequence where, you know, with Sisko and Jake and O'Brien there, you know, as they're dealing with the fusion reactor, like all of that is just top notch, like just absolute stellar character moments for all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
And agreed. fantastic writing in a way that is like not, you know, it's not unheard of in Star Trek to tell like that kind of little story, but like it's kind of uncommon in Star Trek to have those vibes.
I think it's also a nice moment with Jake and Sisko. I think we're seeing Sisko accept Jake as that Jake's growing up. We've seen that over the last couple of episodes. And I think this is another example where Jake is asserting that he's capable.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah.
I think I like that. I like that Sisko respects his son and doesn't like treat him like a baby. He respects when his son says like, I can, you know, let me stay, I can help. And I'm not, you know, I like that.
And also when Jake gives the like very, like, you know, very well thought out, like, you know, if I stay here, I can help. If I head to a runabout, I won't make it.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, which would you rather me do? Stay here and help and maybe we'll all make it, or like die in a hallway somewhere on the way to the runabout?
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. Every part of this episode. I mean, it just,
yeah,
there's little bits here and there that, you know, no DS9 episode is perfect, but this is definitely a classic in my book.
Also, a little thing I actually appreciated, Star Trek doesn't always, when people get injured on Star Trek, it doesn't necessarily always have them show pain, like to a degree that would be commensurate with the injury. And when Jadzia gets her hands burned, and she's just like incapacitated by that, at least like in the moment, she's just like oh my god. And that totally makes sense, because like having a burn like that on your hands, like, wow, that like that hurts. Yeah. And you really can't think of, like, you really can't think past it.
Yeah,
yeah. Like I've burned my hands pretty bad before, and it's like, that is something, there are a lot of nerves in your hands.
Yeah.
Yep. No, it's a nice touch for sure, to show that, no pun intended, to show that there's real consequences here. And it's a good way of showing it. It's a good way of showing that there's real actual consequences to these almost like clownish counterinsurgency measures that Ducat has set up. Because they do feel, at least initially,
yeah,
the whole setup does feel buffoonish. But then Jadzia's hands get torched and Anonymous Red Shirt 7 gets vaporized.
Ends in McDeadface.
Yeah, ends in McDeadface, exactly. Gad. I think, yeah, I also like that. I noticed at one point when they're going to, right at the end, when they're going to save the station from blowing up, they tell Kira to shoot the control station, and she full on like draws her phaser at the station before the two Bajoran workers that are at the station have moved away, and they're like, oh fuck,
and earlier in the episode when she shoots the door, which has like, it's the iconic Kira phaser thing where she's like setting it at like with like phaser pointed at the ceiling, dialing it in, levels it to the door. She's like, doctor. And Bashir, who's been like vamping against this door, realizes, yeah, oh shit.
Like, yeah, please.
Kira has incredibly bad, what do you call it? Down,
she's down range. Barrel discipline.
Barrel discipline, yeah. Like, let them clear the console before you fucking aim at it, Kira. Jesus.
She's like, excuse me, I know how to aim a phaser. It'll be fine.
Look, one thing we have established very clearly on this station is that everything's kind of fucking broken. So forgive me if I don't trust that your phaser won't accidentally fire. The station literally just decided that it's in the middle of a Bajoran insurgency. So fucking give me a second to clear way, huh? Do we have more to say about this one, or is it time to move on to the next one?
I think I just want to say this might be the best bottle episode in all of Trek.
Yeah.
I don't think there are many good contenders. Like there aren't a lot of good contenders.
Bottle episodes are not Star Trek's expertise. No. That's for sure.
I mean, they're done so they can save money and you can have a filler episode, but yeah.
Yeah.
And the device of the, like, kind of like farcically escalating security program, honestly, I feel like works really well. Like, yeah. But like, as a viewer, you're like, yeah, this is ridiculous as hell. Also, it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, it's like, it bypasses the like need for like buy-in from realism, because it like skips past that. And it's like, you get buy-in because it's funny, because like, it's funny to think about like Ducat sitting there with his like fucking like flow chart, like mapping out every single possible,
God,
like every
imagine?
Single possible like thing that could happen, and recording something for every
can
single one of those.
Imagine the recording session that like that did.
Yeah, I'm imagining some poor like
Cardassian Glenn who's there with like, take 15.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Attention, Bajoran.
And then shit, attention, Bajoran right. workers. Have I ever told you about that time that there was the beautiful Bajoran woman who came into my ready room and she had a plate full of cheese and fine wine?
God.
Oh, wait, there's an insurrection. Attention, Bajoran workers.
It's attention, oh, shit. Yeah. Gotta take that from the top. Okay. Attention. No, that didn't feel right. That's out of my throat.
Attention, Bajoran workers. Oh, wait, nope.
And then it gets, and like beyond just like the imagining of like Ducat sitting there and filling out his like flow chart with every possible thing that could possibly happen, like in this in this security protocol, you then get the moment where it's like, oh, you didn't plan ahead for the option where you bailed.
Yeah, or maybe he did, but then somebody else like superseded it. I'm really curious who this other Cardassian is that like was sufficiently high enough rank to be like, no, bitch, you go down with your station.
What a good episode.
Yeah.
I think it's time to move
on. Let's talk
though.
About an episode that's not as good. Although still not without value. What was it you said about it? It
brings us many gifts and many curses.
Thank you.
It is an episode that exists.
Yep. That episode is episode 8 of season 3, Meridian, story by Hillary J. Bader, Evan Carlos Summers, teleplay by Mark Gehard O'Connell, directed by Riker, Jonathan Frakes. I don't know what to think about that part. It's probably not his fault that this episode is what it is.
I don't think any problem with this episode is in the actual directing and execution of it.
No, I think it's that they decided to make it. Yeah. The episode opens on the Replimat, where Kira and Odo discuss coffee, and Odo declines to discuss the first and apparently only time he took a shit, which apparently directly followed the only time he tried to eat food, but lacking taste buds, I guess decided it wasn't worth the effort.
The thing of Odo eating where it's just like, and then you just shove the food into the goo.
We are going to talk about this, but I love the fact that he is obliquely referring to the fact that, like, he had to take a dump afterwards and didn't love the process and wasn't worth it.
I just imagining Odo as like a Midwestern Jell-O salad.
What is it called? Anyway. What is it? Ambrosia.
Oh no, that's not transparent enough.
Yeah.
Sorry about the immediate interruption.
Yes. Kira's confronted by some ginger nice guy who Quark does business with, who apparently couldn't take a hint last night and doesn't now either. Kira suborns Odo into a farcical conversation wherein they are lovers to drive the alien away, which leaves Odo looking bumfuzzled. I am resigned to the fact that something's happening here. I don't know what. Meanwhile, in the, what I gather is the A-plot, the Defiant is off exploring the Gamma Quadrant when they encounter a planet that emerges as if from nowhere. Woo! They are hailed by the planet and go down to have brunch and a chat. While Dax flirts with a scientist, Sisko digs for answers and is told that the planet, known as Meridian, slides into another dimension periodically, where it and everyone on it becomes non-corporeal. Exactly when and how this shift is triggered is the subject of the flirty scientist's research, though at the moment he seems much more interested in researching how far down Dax's markings go, which seems wildly unprofessional to mention in the middle of brunch around a bunch of people you've just met.
I cannot tell you how much mileage I, like, in fanfic, I got out of the use of counting spots.
Yep.
I have to imagine that has become a meme.
That is the second meme that you have unlocked tonight.
Oh, good.
Don't worry. The third one's even worse.
Yeah. I want to point out that O'Brien is sitting across the table from these two pervs this whole time and looks exactly as uncomfortable as you would want him to look while these two are like stuffing fruit in each other's mouths and talking about undressing each other. After the meal,
like, you met 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. Well, I have to believe this is not the first time that O'Brien has watched Dax roll out her game. So I feel like it's the alien guy that's creeping O'Brien out. Because I have to imagine this is not the first time O'Brien has watched Dax do what Dax does. Anyway, after the meal, the scientist, Dural, explains that the interval in which the planet is corporeal is degrading, and soon it will cease to exist. Oh no! Sisko offers the Meridians their aid in trying to prevent this. Back on the Defiant, Dural wastes no time in being wildly unprofessional. While Dax is trying to save his planet from destruction, they probe the sun, not the only probing Dural has in mind, to see if that's the cause of the dimensional shifting. While the probe does its thing, Dural does his and takes Dax on a romantic trip to the planet. I think the thing that offends me here is how little riz this dork has and how well it's working on Dax. They eventually
How dare you? That's Nathan Ingram you're talking about.
Yes, I'm aware now that it's Nathan Ingram, but that doesn't change the fact that this guy has all the charisma of, I don't know, a Republican governor. It's rough, man.
I understand the reference.
I understood that reference. They eventually figure out what the problem is. It's some Star Trek-y science bullshit. But the solution they come up with won't work fast enough to prevent the planet from slipping into its other dimension one last time, separating Dax and her boy toy for 60 years. He offers to leave Meridian and go back to DS9 with her. However, he later admits he would prefer to stay on Meridian, ideally with Dax, and she offers to stay with him, using the transporter to adjust her molecular structure so she can shift dimensions with him. She goes to Sisko to request a 60-year leave of absence, which Sisko reluctantly assents to. There's some stuff we're going to talk about why that seems bizarre to me, but sure, whatever. After spending an afternoon in the transporter buffer, being futzed with by Bashir, she bids a tearful goodbye and beams down. All is not well, however, as Dax is the problem as the planet begins to shift. It refuses to shift while she's down there. The futzing has not been successful, and she has to be beamed away for the planet to complete its transition. One very bad green screen scene later, she's back on the Defiant to lament the 60-year wait for Dural's return. That's the thing that happened. Unfortunately, that is not the end of this episode. We are back on the station now in what I'm going to call the P for Perverts plot, with the titular ginger pervert alien from the opening huffs out of the holosuites in a hurry, much to Quark's amusement, thinking he's a quick finisher, but it turns out he's simply unsatisfied. What he wants, he informs Quark after dropping a heavy load of latinum on the bar, is a holo program of Major Kira. I'm sure this plot line isn't going to get gross fast at all. Quark clearly knows this is an awful idea, but as he says, just barely not looking straight into the camera, the things I do for money. On the pretense that Morn wants to see her, Quark lures Kira into the bar, then pretends she is his millionth customer. While she falls for that, the ruse is unsuccessful, and he is not able to lure her into the holo suite to take her holo image. He then attempts to take her picture with a holo picture, or whatever the hell he calls it, on ops, pretending that he is simply taking pictures of the promenade. Yeah. When Kira and Odo spot him, he pretends that he's simply taking pictures for his mom. When the ginger pervert alien demands an update, Quark assures him that all is well and falls back on hacking Kira's personnel file to get her likeness. Odo seems to have anticipated this and detects it. He's all ready to arrest Quark, but Kira decides that revenge is the better part of justice. When Quark brings the ginger pervert to the holosuite, smug at having finally earned his rich payday, his pleasure is short-lived as the scuzzy alien finds in the holosuite. I don't even know how to say this. In the truly 80s pornographic scenario that Quark has built for him, a scantily clad female figure that starts out as Kira from the ankles to the neck and ends up Quark from the head up, as Justin very accurately imitated. I don't know what is the word. What do you call that? Burbles, squawks. I've been waiting for you.
It's a sultry whisper.
It's a sultry Ferengi whisper. Unsurprisingly, the alien barges out and swears he's going to ruin Quark as Kira and Odo look on in amusement. And that's an episode of Star Trek that happened.
I hate this episode and I hate this plot, but it's also one of my absolute favorites.
It's the whole thing of I hate this plot.
I hate it on paper.
I hate everything that leads up to it. But the punchline is so good. I hate that it's so good.
And there's so many good, like, little moments in it. Like when Quark's trying to be like, yes, everybody just wants to imagine themselves as heroes on ops and, like, doing their part to, like, help out the senior staff. And Odo's just like, they're naked in this scenario, aren't they? You're selling ops porn.
I mean... God, I do find it funny that, like, Odo is the one who calls out, you're doing it for porn, right? Yeah, okay.
Odo knows his boyfriend, and he knows what's up.
Also, the what a big chunk of know that face on this. Because we've got Nathan Ingram.
Yep.
So we've got to know that face from Person of Interest.
And then the weird alien porno,
as I called him, the ginger pervert alien.
We have making his way to this franchise from Herbert West Reanimator, Jeffrey.
My favorite part of this is that I have no idea who that is or why you guys are excited about it.
So this is his first episode of Star Trek. Between DS9, Voyager, and Enterprise and Lower Decks, has he been on Disco?
Hold on, let me find it.
How many episodes of Star Trek are you looking up? How many episodes of Star Trek this man has been on?
He has been on 37 appearances.
Hold on.
I'm going to count it. 21 different characters.
Jesus.
Yep.
Busy.
Yeah. He's one of the like actors who like puts on a like incredibly like commanding performance in heavy prosthetics.
Gotcha. So he's like a, what's his name? The guy who plays Saru.
Yeah, he is a Doug Jones.
He's a Doug Jones. He's like a Jakar for that matter. One of those rare actors that has the ability to emote really effectively through the prosthetics. Because I'll give him that. He conveys weird, desperate horniness right through that rubber. Boy, that's a sentence I wish I hadn't said.
That's probably the horniest role he has, funny enough.
And Justin, I think you may have miscounted on the number of episodes. So we've got, looking at his IMDb. So he's been on 3 episodes of Lower Decks so far. He was on 11 episodes of Enterprise. He was on 1 episode of Voyager.
Yeah, I'm going off of Memory Alpha.
Okay. So,
also had to do some math because there's, he'll make 22 appearances across DS9. I wasn't counting his one-offs. That was my math failure there.
Wait, that wasn't you. That was like the regular appearances, not counting one-off appearances like this.
Yeah.
One?
Yeah.
Correct. These were only these were the characters that he has played.
47.
Which is the perfect number, in fact. Jude, I don't know if you know this, but there is a recurring writer's bit of using the number 47 in Star Trek scripts.
I didn't know that.
Which is because it's 42 adjusted for inflation.
I hate it. Yeah, all right.
But yeah, no, he is... My favorite Ferengi. He is one of my favorite Ferengi. He is the redacted, and he is my favorite Andorian.
Yeah, he puts on a fantastic performance in Enterprise. By the way, like honestly, kind of worth watching Enterprise just for his character. Like,
yeah, no,
I don't believe you.
Shran and Archer are definitely one of my. They should have absolutely bone down.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're like a weird like ice knife fight. If I remember right, that's basically.
Oh yeah,
I will never find out.
That's a very charged You should, in fact, watch Enterprise. Maybe we'll make all you watch Enterprise.
All ritualized combat in Star Trek is just at least a little bit horny.
Everything I've seen so far bears that out.
Aaron, insert the Amok Time music clip here.
Okay, so let's get, first of all, I want to, there's, Brigadoon is kind of a shitty musical.
Okay, this wasn't the, this wasn't what I was expecting you to go with, but okay.
And I'm trying to think of a way you could have made this plot. I'm just trying to think of,
there's no way we could have made this a musical.
No, I'm asking, I'm looking at this whole episode. I'm trying to think.
There's no way to make the A plot good. The A plot is always going to be a TNG A plot, right? Like if we contextualize it as that, it's fine.
But there's so much I hate about it. And it starts with the fact that it's a Brigadoon, which I just resent on so many levels. It's such a shitty, shitty narrative conceit. And then I really don't like Dural as a character, and I don't like how
the like whirlwind romance thing.
Yeah, Dax is so much better than that. Like,
dude, it's no worse than when Beverly fucks a ghost.
Excuse you.
Can I make a confession here? I sort of kind of have like a weak spot for like these one-off dude romance episodes.
I do not.
I don't know why, but I sort of kind of just love it. I kind of
hate them.
Only in like episodic television can somebody like can like fall badly in love with a person and have their heart broken in 45 minutes. And like, I love that compression of like a romance novel plot. Like it's fascinating to me. I kind of have like Stockholm syndrome with it.
Yeah. Which,
okay.
Stockholm syndrome is not actually a thing, but I kind of. But
I will admit that I have seen it done well, ish in the past, and this ain't it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
This is one of the. This is a real steaming turd example of that trope, and. I'll tell you, you want to know how bad this episode is? I'm unfavorably comparing it to an NCIS episode in my head. So that's where we're at. And honestly, I would forgive so much of what's wrong with the A-plot in this episode if it were Bashir and not Dax. Like, Dax just seems like she's way... It just feels so wrong for Dax to be the one experiencing this nonsense romance. Or if Dural had like any riz whatsoever, but
you know
he is.
What this needs? We need a Harry Kim that we could do this to.
Yes, yes,
yes.
Because Bashir is too good.
Bashir, frankly, Alexander Siddig is just like
he's too much of a fox to be a Harry.
Yeah,
Kim.
No, it's just frankly, Alexander Siddig is too hot to have lack this much riz.
he's got his ongoing thing with Garrick. Like, we have established that like there's
why,
you know,
season one Bashir fails is because there's not a universe where I don't think Alexander Siddig is laying pipe.
Yeah, 100% agree.
It's just I'm sorry, can't buy it. You can't get me to believe that kayfabe.
Yeah. So I know 100% absolutely correct. If this had been a Voyager episode and this had happened, let's go look up the Voyager episode where this happens to Harry Kim
like four times.
I think
I'm so embarrassed that I know this. We really are a Star Trek podcast.
Like
now.
It happens to Tom Paris too a lot. I really think that the failing of Star Trek is that we as a society we're too hard on Tilly because she was the female fail son representation that we need, like that we need, because every series should have like one of the crew who's just like is going to get into these situations where you fuck somebody who like is going to disappear for 60 years.
Yeah. Yeah, no, 100%.
Frankly, like, that was sort of kind of Geordi in Next Generation.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Until he gets the like, magical Riz transplant.
Well, he grows a beard, and then all of a sudden, Geordi's...
Well, no. He actually gets a magical Riz transplant from that ascending alien.
Right.
Oh, is that...
Oh, God.
Yeah.
A reference to something? I just remember he got a beard, and all of a sudden he, like...
No, Geordi has the, like, there's an amnesiac alien who's, like, in the middle of ascending and they don't realize it, and, like, Geordi touches him during one of his, like, magic, like, glowy phases and gets, like, a Riz transplant. he gets his charisma stat permanently adjusted upward.
That's fucking hilarious.
I love TNG.
TNG, we're way off the rails, but I can't. I mean, what are you going to say in this episode?
We're never going back to this episode. I mean, sorry. It's
TNG.
This is like truly the worst episode of season 3. And the fact that it's the worst episode, I think, is honestly like such an endorsement of the season.
I was going to say, what a ringing endorsement of this fucking show, of this season, that this is the lowest point. Like a Brigadoon stinker with a weird sex pest B plot that somehow remains moderately entertaining.
The only episode that I think, like looking at the season,
I don't even skip this one in rewatches.
I don't blame you.
I think the contenders for the three worst episodes of the season are The Abandoned.
Yep.
Meridian.
Yep.
And Life Support.
Yeah.
And I think Life Support at least gets a pass because it's like dramatic.
Yeah, it's like plot, but also just fucking sucks.
Yeah. There is multiple people who are having character moments in that, and it's not just like one person fucking an alien. But it's like everything else is like, hold on, I'm gonna do the rest of the season. We have Riker showing up next episode. Troy.
Oh, wait, really?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Defiant is. I need to talk about the guest. I need to get the guest scheduling. But Jonathan Frakes is next episode.
Yep,
that's awesome.
So we're gonna get the Riker and Troy two parter next time. Then we get the time travel two parter. Then we get Life Support. Then we get Heart of Stone, which is good, but Jude is going to hate it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
Yeah. Yep.
Destiny, which is great, and has a great meme moment. Profit Motive, which is a good Ferengi episode.
Yep.
Visionary, which is a great, which is O'Brien becomes Kenny from South Park. Distant Voices, which is Bashir has a midlife crisis.
Bashir has a quarter life crisis, excuse me.
It's so funny.
So good.
Through the Looking Glass, Mirror Universe episode, is going to be good. Improbable Cause of the Die is cast, which I might say are the two best episodes of the season. I will go to bed that and say they're better than Past Tense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love Past Tense, but Improbable Cause and Die is cast are way better.
Explorers, which I'm going to cry multiple times during, because
what does that mean?
Oh, it's father son stuff.
Yeah, oh, okay. It's like, real
as
good.
A dad, you will cry. As
oh, good.
Goes,
so it's gonna.
It's
a fun Jake and Ben one, though. It's like there are great moments in it.
Yeah,
but yeah, that'll train wreck me too. Though.
More Ferengi shit. Shakar, mm-hmm. which. Not great, but
wait,
at least,
wait,
like,
pause, Justin. Guess who comes back in Family Business?
Oh, please tell me.
Jeffrey Combs, motherfucker.
I got excited for a second that it was going to be Lock Swan, but
yeah. Then we have Facets, which is a fun episode, And then we have the adversary, which is a great season finale. Like there's only like two bad. There's one episode that I'm going to say is like not good. And there's one that is like, you're going to be on the struggle bus, Jude. just cause I know you, but
yeah,
no, we're
that's what Heart of Stone.
Like,
yeah.
Okay.
God, it's going to be fun though. I'm like this is, I don't want to put this, but I think this might be the best single season of Star Trek.
I'd agree with that.
I'm trying to think of I'd have to look at other ones. And you know, this is how far off the track is that I'm like, we've stopped talking about Meridian, but I'm like, I'm putting this here. But I'm like, I'll put the case for it. Even when they're like forgetting that they have a meta plot when they're trying to do it. Like, they completely forget they have a meta plot this season, frankly.
Well, no, that's not true. Hey, they mentioned for a whole, like, 4 seconds at the top of this episode that the Dominion exists.
Oh, yeah. They will check in to remind you that the Dominion exists. I love it.
Yeah. Well, they say, even though the Dominion exists, we still have to go into the Gamma Quadrant.
This season, they're just busy playing with their new toy, the new ship, the Defiant.
Frankly, if I had the Defiant, I would take that thing.
Find dining restaurants, upscale hotels.
Yeah, or just, I mean, no, I'd take an RVing. We'd just go off-roading with this baby.
I think Justin missed the implication I was making that he was romancing the
frankly, if I'm going to be romancing the Defiant, it's going to be elbows deep in a Jeffrey's tube.
Okay, I don't know what to make of that statement.
I'm really hornier for this ship than you are.
Jesus Christ.
Like Meridian is such a stinker of an episode, except like I never skip it. Like, it's got,
I don't even hate B plot is like a romantic. I don't even hate like Brett Cullen as a romantic lead thing.
Right,
I don't hate him for it. I just think I just don't think he's got the riz to get Dax in bed.
Yeah, but like,
then we'll see. Once you see her future romances, you'll retract that statement.
I mean, but like, also like, Dax does not necessarily have good taste.
She will, in fact, date the most rizless man in Star Trek.
I know she ends up dating Worf. Okay?
I know. So do you see my statement?
Rizless Klingon.
Hold on. I don't think Worf has no riz.
Oh, I think Worf has zero charisma. He has no game. And frankly, apparently the sex is great. But
I guess he does. See, I just have to imagine that, like, Dex is like across, you know, sitting with like Dural and being like, "Wow, you know, this guy seems nice and he has a huge dick. Let's do this."
I wonder if it's just literally a thing of like once you've been married 8 times and you've you know, you're on your 7th lifetime, you've been married like 4 or 5 times. Who knows how many times Curzon got married? But it's just like, you're just like, frankly, romance is dead to me. All I need is all I need is to get railed so hard I pass out.
And I think Dax was looking forward to getting railed as a non-corporeal being. Let's be real.
Oh man. We can't top that. I think we're obligated to close the episode out at Dax getting railed as a non-corporeal being.
Yeah. I just love how relentlessly horny this episode is. Like,
it really is. The slow pan from Kira's ankles up to Quark's head is an image.
The greatest cinematography in Star Trek.
I think what makes it better for me is knowing that Jonathan Frakes directed that shot.
Oh my God. The most, frankly.
That it is such, it makes me really happy to know that Riker is responsible for that moment. That does, that makes it better for me somehow.
And it feels appropriate somehow that Frakes, the man who played one of the most horny Star Trek characters, directs this, one of the most horny DS9 episodes.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Frankly, it's like, I mean, Riker's just a weird little guy who happens to be like 6'4 and hot. So just best of both worlds right there.
Yep.
God.
All right. We're pulling the ripcord on this one. Don't worry. We're going to have a lot more Riker thirsting next episode. The next episode we're going to be doing, we will be covering episodes 9 and 10 of season 3, The Defiant and Fascinations. It's a Next Generation reunion tour, bitches! Until next time, just keep circling. Keep circling. Just keep circling.
Just keep circling.
Yeah.
Just keep circling.
The Babylon Project is an independent production. All views expressed on the show are our own. Clips from the original show remain property of the original owner. Music information can be found in the show notes. The rest of the show is licensed under a Creative Commons 4.0 share alike no derivatives license.
I have a suggestion for an alternate ending. If you want me to do it.
Sure.
Keep revolting.
And until next time, I've been waiting for you.
I've been waiting for you.